If you know, the middle of your Bible should be approximately Psalms, Proverbs, and the next book is Ecclesiastes, written by a guy named Solomon, who happened to be a king in Judah. Actually, over all of Israel at the time. He followed up his daddy. His daddy was named David. One of the things attributed to Solomon is his great wealth and his great wisdom. Have you ever known a person who had great wisdom and yet they did stupid things? Okay, that's Solomon. Just because you're really smart, you may have a college degree, you graduated grade school, whatever it may be, you can still do dumb things. And friends reveal themselves in the midst of your dumbness at times. Okay? And we'll talk a little bit about that. But if you've got Ecclesiastes, we'll be coming there, so just know where it is. Our fall series, we just got done with a three-month summer series called Paul's Odyssey. Our fall series is going to be during the months of October and November. It's called How To. Very simple. How to. Each week we're going to add a topic. This first week at the top is what? How to be, say it, a friend. How to be a friend. And we're going to look at things from God's perspective. We're all influenced by our culture, positively and negatively. Sometimes people's concept of what is good, what is nice, and what is a friend is shaped by our culture, not by biblical principles. So we're going to look at what the Scripture has to say. How to, the latter part is what? Be a friend. When you look at how to, there's numerous books that have been written with those words in the title. The book starts off with how to. They generally, in a bookstore or online, fall into one of two categories, either self-help or self-improvement. Okay, if on Amazon alone, they have over 70,000 books. Amazon Books has over 70,000 books dealing with how to some subject. And a lot of titles that would fall in there don't just start with the words how to, but that's the sense of the book. The book's going to teach you to do something that you probably don't already know how to do. Does that make sense to you? Okay. That's a how-to book. Here's some books that are on the market for children. For example, How to Make Friends with a Ghost. Isn't that important? How to Catch the Easter Bunny, or How to Catch a Leprechaun. Those are needed books by children. Then there's books like this, How to Meet a Mermaid for a child. Here's another one, How to Find a Unicorn. How to Be a Pirate. And this was needed for me when I was a kid growing up, had a small bedroom, shared it with my brother who was older. We had one closet. Now think back, some of you, 40, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, how big were the closets in your bedrooms? Yeah, about big enough for you and one other thing. Called a monster. And that's what my older brother Charles told me lived in there. Why did he do that? So I'd quit talking to him when we're supposed to be going to sleep. He'd say, do you want me to get up and open the door? So they have books in that. Now, for us older kids, the titles become much more sophisticated. This book, I think, is needed in today's world. Okay? We had that. There you go. The first one on the left, How to Survive a Sharknado and Other Unnatural Disasters How to Fight Back When Monsters and Mother Nature Attack. Okay, that's a long title. But in today's world, aren't we sometimes looking for books to help us get through the really tough times in life? Here's another one, How to Sell a Haunted House. Stacy, you're a realtor, do you own that? You should. Here's another one. How to Fail at Flirting. How to Live Forever. That's a good one. It's not even the Bible. Here's another one. It's sort of in the middle there. How to Work for an Idiot. Greg? Moving on. How to Be Popular. Here's another one. Simple. How to Be Happy. Here's one some of you might like. How to Eat Like a Child and Other Lessons in Not Being a Grown-Up. That's the title of the book. Here's another one. How to Get People to Do Stuff. That's the book. And it's a bestseller. And then there's the last one on the far right. How to Kiss. And it says, kissing tips from the first kiss to the last and everything in between. You should get somebody that copy. Get a copy of that for this Christmas time when it comes. So there's all kinds of how-to books. Do you own them, Paul? Oh, okay. All right. Greg will know the answer to this. So take a big sip, as I will. What is the most famous how-to book on the market? Very good. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. How many of you have ever read the book? Okay, that's not bad. That's not bad. It's a classic book on communication, human relations, how to learn about people, and how to play nice and get along. The book, Greg, any idea when it was written? Very close, 36. 88 years ago. 88 years ago. It has sold 30 million copies. That means every year from the time in which it was released in 36 up till today, 341,000 copies a year are sold. That's not bad. It's a book that many people in the business world, people who are in sales, was this required reading for teaching? Okay. But anybody who works with people, that would be a good book. Again, it's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. In 2013, the Library of Congress ranked that book as the 7th most influential book in the history of our nation. You might want to get a copy of that with the book How to Kiss. It'd go good. So around your table, just you got a minute or two, what's a how-to book that you yourself have bought and read? And it didn't have to start with the words how-to, but it's something else. Okay? Anybody at your table, just check right now. All right. There's all kinds of books out there. Usually if I'm going to travel to a foreign destination, I will either look at a book, I don't necessarily buy it, I'll go to a bookstore or read excerpts of it online, or I'll look for magazine articles, how to do Italy in 21 days, or how to see Singapore in a weekend. Those books are helpful, but do they guarantee you success? No how-to book guarantees success because you have to do what it says to have any hope of success. So the idea of understanding friendship, the idea of having friends and being a friend are really important in our culture today, especially the American culture, more so maybe than any other nation on planet Earth. Americans view themselves as friendly, but the rest of the world agrees with that we're very outgoing. Hey, nice to have you here, Bob. But they view us as extremely shallow. Extremely shallow. In fact, they mock us for that. We're all the time ready to wave at somebody, but then we turn our back from them oftentimes. Now, whether right or wrong, that's the way the world views us. So we have to understand friendship. In our families, having friends with one another, in our peer group, at work, at school, especially in God's church and in our culture. One of the hardest words to define is the word friend. There was a contest given many years ago in England, and the winning definition, and there were literally thousands of definitions turned in. It was a newspaper that did this, a winning definition, and has been the standard for many, many years, is a friend is someone who stays when everyone else leaves. Now that, if you think of it, that's very true of Jesus. In John 15, Jesus fed 5,000. We know there were more, true? As commentators say, 15, 20,000 when you figure in the opposite sex, when you figure in children and infants and stuff like that. We'll just say it was a small number. We'll say 15,000 people. He fed them, because they usually only counted the men. He fed them, and then he began to speak to them about biblical truth, about having a right, healthy relationship with him, and they all turned and left. Jesus, to the point where he's a little baffled, I always envision Jesus laying in the mud with sandal prints all over him as they ran to get away from any kind of commitment. And Jesus turned to his disciples and said, "Will even you go?" A true friend will what? A true friend stayed. So when we think of Carnegie, Carnegie teaches us how to have friends, gain friends, but also how to be a friend. Very good. So there's all kinds of definitions. We would probably, most of us would agree with this. A friend is someone with whom you share some sort of social and or emotional bond. True? Yeah. Now, we know there's different levels of friends, at least in the American culture. There's people who are acquaintances. There are casual friends. Then there are friends. And then there's your, pick the word, your best friend. And then there's your one and only. You know, Americans like to rate things. Can you do that with the people in your life? Do you rate them? Or do you just subconsciously know who your person is? Grey's Anatomy, many years ago, if you've ever watched that show, there's two ladies, the stars on the show, and Ellen would always say to this one, she said, "You're my person." Now, again, that's up for definition, right? But we kind of know what a friend means, but I want us today to really check ourselves and ask, are our friends based upon what the world has taught us and what's comfortable to us, or are we relying upon what Scripture says? Usually with friends, tell me if this is not true, you have something in common. It doesn't matter. Some people have the weirdest things in common. Okay, it could be that you have spent time with them. And over that period, like, think of how many people go away to college or into the military, and they spend 3 years, 4 years with somebody, rooming with them, we would say in a foxhole with them. Most college dorms are like that. And then there's this bond. You probably would never have normally connected with this person, but because you spent what? Time. How about this? You have similar beliefs and values. Would you agree? Yeah. Not exact, but similar. How about the fact that you trust them? And again, trust, you might say, you smile and you go, to what degree? To what degree? Could be a little bit of trust or a whole lot of trust. You feel a sense of loyalty and commitment, whatever that would look like. True? How about this? You maintain a degree of openness and vulnerability. You can be, the word in word now is real with one another. Then there's this. You enjoy being around them. Do you have people in your life that you could be away from them for 3-4 years, you see the person, it's almost like that thing that's on YouTube where two little kids at the opposite ends of the sidewalks are going, and you just instantly connect. You might say this about a friend. You generally get them and they you. Now, Tim and I have known each other, I dare say, in this room, as long as any other two people. True? Over 60 years. I don't totally get Tim. He gets me totally. Right?
Yeah.
You will never totally get anybody, but in general terms, you You do. You do. Our media has given us many, many examples of friends from TV shows, movies. Think of it, TV shows, movies. Good friends and bad friends. Those who are deeply committed and those who are loosely casual. Those people who, there's a pleasure in having them and there's a pain in losing them. Shows have depicted that, right? And most of us would sit there and some of us get a little tear in our eye. Some of us just kind of grit it out. Some of us laugh, whatever. But there is pain in losing a friend. Now, that friend may have moved away. They may die. They could be transferred out. There's a lot of ways people leave your life. People come in and people what? Yeah. And if they've meant anything to you, don't you sort of miss them? And not just for the moment. Do you still miss them later in life? Yeah, that's a friend. As Christians, there's numerous examples, numerous passages in the Bible. So I'll name a friend. Generally, I'll bet you can guess this person's friend. Ruth is a friend. Who was one of her friends? See, you got that one. David and Elijah and Elisha. Now, this you could fill in the blank. Multiple. We just got done with 3 months on the apostle. Who are some of his friends? Yeah, all. Paul is a classic example of somebody had a a number of friends, numerous friends. And we could argue in Paul's life there were some at this level, there were some here, there were some here. And Paul had some that just flat deserted him. At one time he called Demas a friend and Demas turned on him. That happens in friendships, would you agree? Okay. So our title today is How to Be a Friend. Not how to have friends, because if we look at how to be a friend, greater likelihood that we will have them. You think? Now, you just go through, as I mentioned these things, tell me if this isn't true in your life. We all want friends who are, think of this, who are loyal people with whom you can be yourself. Would that be true? You want fun people. They energize you for whatever reason. They tell dumb stories. They're always positive. They smile. They put up with you. But they're fun to be around. You walk away and you feel like the weight of the world is gone. Agreed? How about thought-provoking people? They stimulate your imagination, your conscience, and also your passion. Having been around them, you want to do something positive. They don't leave you being in the they don't leave you in the dumps, if you will. How about this? Good people who have character and they understand loyalty and commitment. Do you want somebody like that or do you want somebody on the other side? How about forgiving people who will love and accept you when you're silly, when you're stupid, when you're selfish, and when you're sinful? Doesn't mean they accept your sin, but they still what? That's almost like a parent to a child. They accept you. They don't accept what you do because they challenge you, but they're not going to turn and run from you. How about this? Generous people. Do you like generous people? You know, the ones who always reach for the check first. Don't you want that person in your life? Of course we do. How to be a friend. Well, that's the kind of people we want. And just like the video, then that's the sort of person we should be, what? We should be. And when I talk about friends, younger people sometimes don't get this. Well, I've got 5,000 friends on my Facebook page. Or on my email contact list, really. See, that's what the world says is a friend. That's not a biblical friend. A biblical friend is this. Eye to eye, life to life. So, as we talk about this message today, it's a short message, long introduction, because part of the introduction sets up the whole series on how to be a friend, okay? How do you become the type of person, if you will, that a thinking golden retriever would choose? How do you become that kind of person? Because dogs just love you. As long as you're not shooting them or buying a cat to share their bed, they love you, right? But if a golden retriever, who's the most compassionate and the friendliest and the most adoring dog in the dog species world, at least according to me, if you had one that could actually think, would he choose you? We know cats won't choose you. But would a golden retriever go, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, I'll take you to go? Would they do that? That's what we're asking. How to be a friend, to be somebody that somebody else would not just choose you because you're all that there's left. They would choose you to be their friend because you're all that they want or need. How do you become that type of person? The Bible has the answers for it. We're in Ecclesiastes now, chapter 4, if you look at that chapter. Ecclesiastes 4, written by the wisest man in the world, in one of the moments in which he was not one of the dumbest men in the world. He had tremendous wisdom. He was like all of us. He had two sides. Ecclesiastes 4, I'm reading from the New Living Translation, NLT, today, and we're going to look in verse 9. So I'm just going to read to you a few verses. Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other, what? Verse 10. If one person falls, the other can what? And? But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. I don't know why when I read that I started cracking up. What was I thinking of? Remember the commercial? Help, I've fallen. All right. I'm reaching that stage. Verse 11. Likewise. Now, no, the word likewise is one of those words you need to pay attention to, not just read over. They just gave you an example here of a person who falls. Likewise, connection here. Two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? Easy, turn on the electric blanket, right? Okay, this was written before electric blanket. You get the concept, correct? Okay, verse 12. A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated. But two can stand what? Back to back and conquer. Three are even better. And then he uses an illustration here. Just talking about people. Then he kind of dives off the page and he says something that everybody in that culture could understand. Remember, they're farmers, they're herdsmen, they're warriors. They use ropes in every aspect of their life. Three are even better, for a triple braided what? Is not easily broken. You take one string, you can bink, put two strings together, twine them together, a little harder, put three together, becomes really tough. That's the illustration. So let's look at four ways that we can be a better person using this text. Verse 9, focus on our friends' overall success in life. Focus on our friends' what? Overall success in life. Verse 9, two people are better off than one, for they can help each other what? Succeed. Two people working together, generally, assuming they're in agreement, can succeed, can accomplish more. We had a great turnout yesterday, and very thankful for the men and the women that came yesterday to help with so much of the landscaping work. Remember, every Saturday, 9 to 12, through the month of October, we're cleaning up church grounds, getting everything ready for the winter. Had a great turnout yesterday. If only one person had shown up, we would not have got all the work done. Does that make sense? To be a good friend, we actually have to care about others and not just ourselves. We live in an extremely selfish period of time in American history. The idea of American pioneers helping one another, circling the wagons, is non-existent. We pretty much live in an isolationist culture. Everybody has their own house. They have their own yard. The garage door goes up when they go to work. It goes down. When they come home, it goes up, goes down. Everybody's alone. It's called bowling alone, psychologists have called it. Used to be everybody was on a league. Now people don't have time. They don't have the prior. Their lives are filled up with whatever makes me happy and whatever my family wants to do. And the idea of community is sadly becoming a thing of the past. Would you agree? We're consumed with ourselves, our agenda, how someone can make us look good, what our next achievement can be, and how we can benefit. America has become a shell of what it used to be on this factor alone. Because it's all about what benefits me. The Lord taught that the greatest in the kingdom of God, Jesus taught this, is a person who has the behavior and the attitudes of a servant. Not a lord, not a king, not a CEO. Somebody who serves other people. That means to be a friend, we have to be a servant, which implies honorable, honorable, teachable, humble. Attitudes that in the American culture are not valued very high. You have to be number one. You got to fight for all the gusto in life, right? It's about me. We have to move from just words, you're my friend, to what I call willful actions. Show that you're there. Show them that you're their friend. And how do we do that? Jesus said, by serving others. And here's the typical American church response. Yeah, but then they'll take advantage of. Say it. You see where the problem is there? You're worried about you. Jesus was never worried about him. He came to serve people. He stooped to serve people. He's taught his disciples that. If we would serve just a little bit more, do you realize we would probably make a significant impact in our culture? How many of us have gone through a fast food place and we're so quick to get our food and get on with our agenda? Have you ever just stopped and said, I'll pay for the guy behind me? You're serving the person behind. Why do you do it? It's not why do you do it. You do it just because this might be something Jesus would do that day. And I'm not saying you do it for everybody. But when the Lord puts it onto your heart or into your mind that you're to serve somebody in some capacity, you just do it and let God get the glory for it. You're showing somebody else that another human being actually cares about them, notices them, sees that they have value, and it reduces our self-interest just a little bit more. Does that make sense? So we need to, first of all, focus on our friends' overall success. Paul emphasizes in his writings to Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. Listen to these words. He's writing to a church, one of his favorite churches. It's a healthy church. It's a good church. But even in a good church, people squabble. And they squabble when one person thinks they're better than the other, has more coming to them than the other. And he writes this in Philippians 2, 3 and 4. Paul says, don't be selfish. By saying don't be selfish, what's the implication? They were being what? Selfish. He says, don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. And again, the initial response is, yeah, but then what about me? When we're always worried about me, we diminish the other person that we're talking about. Verse 4, don't look out only for your own interests. Now, this verse clears up any misconception in verse 3. It doesn't say you can't ever think about yourself. It says don't look out only for your own interest, but take an interest in others. That's what we're talking about. Look at your friend and say and ask the question, what can I do to make their day better? How can I bless them? How can I encourage them? But if I do all of that to my friends, who's going to do it to me? See the problem there? Can you trust God that as you give, he will ensure that you get? Now, that doesn't mean because I bless Ed, Ed's going to turn around and take me out to dinner tonight because I like Clara's in Battle Creek. You see, it doesn't mean they're going to do that. What it means is God may come into my life or through somebody else and use them to bless me. God never leaves you alone when you're obedient. He brings people into your life. If you give, you will receive. Is that not a biblical principle? It is. Don't look out on your own interest, but take an interest in others only. Here's some tips, real quick. What can I do for you today? What can you do for your friends? Remember, all year, we've given you three tasks. First is to walk where? Across the room, get to know somebody here. Secondly, open the door. Invite them into your life. Go out, share life with them. Third one is pull up a chair. So here's some tips that as we try to influence other people and try to be a friend to them, as Carnegie would say, here's four words that start with the letter P. Pray for their success, not just their struggles. Sometimes we'll hear, Matt's sick, so I'll pray, oh Lord, help Matt to get better. Well, great. How about just pray for him when things are going well? Are you with me? Sometimes we only pray for people when they're struggling. Let's pray for their success. Pray for their family. Pray for their job. Pray for their influence with other people. Pray for their spiritual growth. If you wait till they're beaten down, it's much harder for them to get up than when they're already up to move forward. Does that make any sense? So that's number one. Pray for their success. Number two, pat them on the back more than stabbing them in the back. Number three, praise their efforts. Don't focus as much on their errors. Your friends are broken people just like you. We're all whacked out. Would you agree? We all have our own wackiness there. So when we praise their efforts, sometimes you try hard and it just doesn't work out. A lot of dads have said to the kids, well, you didn't do a very good job. How about just praising them for the fact that they attempted? If we're so focused on the outcome, we don't see the journey or the effort going forward. And Gary St. Hodge, who is here, and myself, and is Jeff Fisher here? I'm not sure. Kevin Stewart is here, I know. There's a lot of us here, and a lot of women, too. We've been involved in coaching. A lot of you are involved in teaching, in 4-H and stuff. You work with kids, right? Gary, have you ever met a perfect football player? No, nope, neither have I. There's no perfect people, whether on the field or in the classroom or in the workplace. So let's just give them a pat on the back when they attempt to do something good. Praise their efforts. Number four, point them towards the Lord and remind them of their potential. Point them towards the Lord and remind them of their potential. Why? Because we're all going to lose at something. We're all going to fail at something. And sometimes the only place you can look is up because you're so far down. So always, always, always point people towards God and remind them of their potential. That's number one. We simply want to focus on their success, and those are four practical ways to do it. Secondly, see your notes? Secondly, find a way to help our friend when they're in need. I like the Bible passage that we looked at here, verse 10 and 11. If a person falls, the other can reach out and help them. I don't know why this is true of men. Ladies, most of you do not get this. If I'm walking with Ed, I'm walking here with Bob and a few other guys, we're walking down the road, and one of them stubs their toe. Guys, what are we going to do? Laugh. Okay? Does that make any sense to a woman? And the worse he's hurt, the bigger the fall, the harder we laugh, unless they're seriously hurt. Then we'll bandage them up, and then we'll go, what's the dumbest thing you've ever done? I don't know why we do that. Girls, have you figured it out? But it's fun. That's a guy response to the troubles in life. So a person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. The idea there is you just have to be available to your friends. So if they are in trouble, I'm not saying laugh or not laugh. I'm just saying what? Help them. And then it says, likewise, look at verse 11, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. And then here's what most women are going to say. But he has cold feet. You don't understand my husband. or he's like a radiator, whatever it may be. We just think of what it's saying. If you're cold, get a dog, get a cat, get a friend, because in the Bible you hear about King David having a young lady in his bed, warming his bed. Here's what most women do. Yeah, warming his bed. Guys, she's warming his bed. Okay, he's cold. He's an old man. Sometimes I will, Evie's up later, I go to bed, and I get in the bed, it's all warm and cuddly, and then because I'm a nice guy, sometimes I scoop my butt over to where she's going to lay. I am like a little furnace. Drool on her pillow. Warm the bed, she'll come in. I feel this person. Why did I do that? So she'll be what? Warm. This illustration totally makes sense. The idea is two are better than one in almost every aspect of life. They deal with situations that are tough and troublesome, both of those illustrations, that all of us face alone. We're all going to fall in the sense of getting ourselves into trouble. We need help. We don't need as much criticism. We need the help. And all of us are cold in this sense, not just physically cold. Have you ever just felt empty emotionally, spiritually? Felt you were alone, like maybe the proverbial world is all against you? It helps to have somebody to warm you, to come close to you, to put their arm around you, to hold you, to shake your hand, even to touch your arm. Psychologists have proven that 7 touches a day are required for a wife to have any kind of emotional stability in her life. Not let's go to bed touches, but just a physical touch on the arm, on the hand, a little hug. That's why it's so critical with your boys and girls. You rub their hair, pat them on the back, sit them on your lap, whatever it may be. People need to be touched because that's one of the most powerful ways of communicating love, trust, and acceptance. Agreed? Agreed. I think we all would agree with that. So the idea here is find a way to help your friend. It's interesting to me that in the story of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10, it uses in verse 30, if you're familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan, guy walking down the road, he's beat up by robbers, 2 very religious dudes walk by him, cross to the other side, don't help, and a guy who has no kinship to the man. He's different religiously, he's different geographically, he's different culturally, he's a Samaritan. It says in verse 30, using the NET version, it says, a man was going down from Jerusalem, down to Jericho, the lowest place on planet Earth, lowest civilized inhabited place on planet Earth, and he fell into the hands of robbers. I like the word. He fell. He didn't plan it. The situation just came upon him. Has that ever happened to you? How many of you have driven down the roads of Michigan and Bambi decides to commit suicide on your car? Did you ask for the inconvenience? It's not that it's a deer. Oh, look, I killed a deer. And you keep driving. No, he's wrecked your car. How long does that take? How much money? You didn't plan that. That's the idea of this robber, this man that was going down, these robbers that got him. When we're aware of our friends having issues in their life, it's critical that we're available and willing. Even after the fact is better than not at all. True? All right. Here's your third thing. Form a bond of loyalty, verse 12. The first half of verse 12. It says, a person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but 2 can stand back to back and conquer. This shows real friendship. Form a bond of loyalty. When we read that passage, at least 4 terms stood out to me as I studied this and thought about 2 people who are back to back, 1 defending the other. Proximity is critical. It talked about one guy all alone. There's nobody near him. And just having a guy, a friend over here watching you get the stuffing beat out of you, that ain't going to help you. Would you agree? Proximity, being close to one another, and in this case, back to back. We see passion, we see persistence, and we see a pledge that if I will be here even if you go down, I'll be defending you. That's a bond of loyalty. True friends are bonded against attacks. Agreed or disagree? Yeah. All of those are critical. Our TV shows and movies, again, have displayed to us what real biblical friendship is like, because it includes all those elements. You care about one another. You're there. You'll defend. You don't let somebody unjustly do your friend or friends in. So look at up here on the screen. Look at these pictures. The first one, or I guess they're all up here now. The first, the movie on the upper left is what? Lord of the Rings. Does that not communicate what I just talked about? A pledge or a bond of loyalty to stick together against the forces of evil. What's the second one on the right? You know that one? Right across, Intouchables. If you've never seen it, it's a great movie about how these two guys are there for each other. They don't start out as best of friends. They become best of friends. The one down below it to the left is what? Shawshank. Are they not buds? Do they not stand there against the forces of evil as much as they're able? And what's the last one? Hacksaw Ridge. This guy was, true story of a soldier in the American Army who was really belittled because of his faith in God, brutally beaten, ridiculed continually through boot camp all the way to the front lines. And then when his unit got slaughtered, absolutely wiped out on top of this huge cliff, he was the one, the God-fearer, the person who worshiped God, the person who understood Christ's friendship for humanity, would go rescue one and lower them all the way down, and would go and rescue one and lower. Any of you see the movie? One of the greatest movies on friendship you could ever watch, because it depicts on how a friend stays close to you and is loyal to you. Do we not see that in the movie Cheer, or the TV show Cheers and the TV show Friends? They're whacked friends. Most of our friendships are whacked. But don't they stick together? Of course they do. Here's our fourth way to be a friend to others. Foster an environment where Jesus can be woven into your relationship. Foster an environment that Jesus can slowly be woven into your relationship. The latter part of verse 12 says this: three are better, for a triple braid cord is not easily broken. There was momentarily there a picture of a three braided cord. In many wedding ceremonies, business associations, and in some Christian organizations, they use three cords: man, woman when they get married, and then they have a third cord that they braid, just like most of us have seen the pouring of the sand or the lighting of candles to communicate two families coming up. What do you think that third one represents? God. When God's part of a relationship, there's very little, if anything, that will ever hinder that relationship. And it has to be slowly woven with the other two. It can't just be thrust into it or laid on top of it. It must be part of the two lives. This is why the Bible is very careful in admonishing us about our relationships. Do not be unequally yoked. Means two people with different spiritual perspectives, spiritual destinies, spiritual outlooks. If you have two different people, they rarely are ever going to really connect deeply, because there's a third of their life, body, soul, and spirit, a third of their life is dead. A third of their life is non-existent. It's hard to weave with a person who's not willing to give it all. When Jesus is woven in, greater likelihood for the strength of a marriage, of a business, of a friendship, etc. So how do we weave Jesus in? You can pray for people. Pray for your friends. Does that make sense? You can discuss the issues you face in life and be open and a little more vulnerable. You can talk about how your faith in God has helped you. You can share an appropriate Bible passage. You can invite a person to an event, whether it's church or it's rally a trail rally, or it's a home group. You can invite them where they can meet other Christians and hear how God works in people's lives in a practical way. You can pull up a chair and sit down and actually explain the story to someone else. The story of Jesus, God's story of Jesus, of all that Jesus did, and your story with Jesus, how he's transformed your life. Those are simply four principles from Ecclesiastes. Now, I don't know about you. Does Solomon sound like he's a little bit wise through these four things? You want to have friends? It's always been said. It's not in the Bible, but we've always heard this. You want to have friends, you must. And at least in our human minds, that somewhat makes sense. Our challenge this week is when you go out of here, if you've got somebody that you call a, you let them know that they're your friend. You encourage them. You pray for them. You laugh at their goofiness. You challenge them to be better. If you have somebody at work, at school, family, your peer group that you want to deepen a friendship with, you've got four practical things that you could do. Pick and begin to do it this week. Our God sent his son Jesus into this world to be our closest and dearest what? Friend. But we have to reconcile with him. If you're not a Christian today, the only way you can have a relationship with God is through his son Jesus, who desperately wants to save you from your sin and to be your, we would say, your eternal friend. But he's waiting for you to take a step, and that means you have to turn your life over to him. And I'd love to talk with you about that some other time. People in the church would be able to talk with you if you came at somebody's request. Be a friend this week, starting now. Before you leave here, if there's somebody here that you value their friendship, make sure you give them a hug. You shake their hand. You just walk up to them and say, Tim, thanks for being my friend for so many years. And that will encourage there. Put your hands out if you would. Father, we're grateful to be here. As our hands are out wide, we're asking for your grace to fill our life, to help us to be the kind of friend that Solomon wrote about here. May we encourage people going forward this week and be you.